Israeli forces have attacked Palestinian worshippers at Al-Aqsa Mosque, Al-Quds City. Iran's President Ebrahim Raisi says Tehran will not allow Israel to use the territory of any country, including Iraq, to threaten regional security. And the International Monetary Fund says the fallout of the war in Ukraine has prompted it to cut global growth forecasts for this year and next year. Hello and welcome. Your world news coming to you live from our headquarters in Tehran. My name is Gisum Shahmadi. Tensions simmering in the occupied Palestinian territories during the fasting month of Ramadan. Israeli forces have attacked the Palestinian worshippers at Al-Aqsa Mosque, Al-Quds City. At least 90 Palestinians were injured as Israeli forces fired sound bombs and rubber bullets. That is according to the Palestinian Red Crescent. Israeli troops are now trying to empty Al-Aqsa Mosque. Palestinian resistance movement Hamas has condemned the attack as a vicious raid. It has held Israel accountable for the consequences of attacks against Palestinians, saying they are legitimately defending themselves against the regime. Israeli forces have intensified the crackdown on Palestinians across the occupied West Bank, killing a dozen since Sunday. Many more have been arrested. The crackdown follows a series of deadly Palestinian operations against Israelis. Our correspondent Mona Kendall has joined us from Ramallah, explaining how tensions unfolded at the Al-Aqsa Mosque compound.
There were calls by Israeli settler groups on the settlers to raid the Al-Aqsa Mosque compound to perform a sacrifice during one of their feasts known as Passover. That's why thousands of Palestinians, literally thousands of Palestinians, for the Fajr prayers, the morning prayers, came from across the lands that were occupied in 1948 and from Al-Quds. They entered the Al-Aqsa Mosque in order to perform the Fajr prayers and to remain in the Al-Aqsa in order to defend it in case the Israeli settlers tried to storm the Al-Aqsa Mosque compound. Following the Friday, the morning prayers, hundreds of Palestinian youths remained inside the Al-Aqsa Mosque. They were afraid that the settlers could carry out their threat. This has angered the Israeli soldiers, police officers. We are speaking about hundreds of Israeli police officers surrounding the Al-Aqsa Mosque complex and stationing at all the gates leading to the Al-Aqsa Mosque. They raided the complex of Al-Aqsa Mosque and they attacked the people there.
To discuss that further, we're joined by Mark Weber, director of the Institute for Historical Review. Thank you very much, Mr. Weber. Now, we see these attacks intensifying during the holy month of Ramadan. Why? What is the reason behind that?
I think it's really important to remember, well, of course, this is the holy month, and that heightens emotions throughout Israel and occupied Israel, occupied Palestine. The focus, this focused worldwide attention in recent weeks on the Ukraine war has also meant that there's much less attention been given to the ongoing and decades-old oppression by Israel of non-Jews in occupied Palestine. The outbreak that we've seen in recent weeks by a violent resistance to the Israel regime, including, of course, the storming just hours ago of the Al-Aqsa Mosque, reminds us, or should remind us at least once again, of the of something that shouldn't be forgotten. That is, Israel's relentless apartheid oppression of non-Jews, of the non-Jewish population in Palestine, Israel. During the decades when the Soviet Union was at the peak of its power and influence, not many people around the world gave much thought to the regime's ongoing institutionalized oppression of Ukrainians and other peoples in the whole Soviet empire. And of course, the friends of the Soviet Union, the Soviet leaders, wanted the world to forget the reality of the Soviet regime's oppression. And by its same token, Israel and its supporters would like the world to forget, to ignore, to turn its attention away from what's going on and has been going on for decades by the Zionist regime. But that reality hasn't gone away, and it's not going to go away. And just as the struggle for Ukrainians, for their national freedom, for their national rights, is now dramatically obvious to the entire world, I'm confident the day will come when the struggle by Palestinians for their national rights and their freedom will be also dramatically obvious to the entire world.
Is a requirement for this to come to light. I mean, we have people who are praying in Al-Aqsa Mosque and they're being attacked, and now we have news coming in that more than 100 people have been injured. How is that going to not come to light? How do Israelis think about this? I mean, when is the world going to start taking serious steps in order to stop Israel from these atrocities?
This oppression and these outbreaks of violence, which happen periodically, have been going on for decades. When people don't hear about a situation, they don't care about it. The media in America has been giving huge, enormous attention, of course, to the Ukraine war. But when people don't hear about it on the media, they don't pay attention. And the American media does not give the attention that it should, I think by any just reasonable standard, to what Israel is doing. In fact, just the opposite. The American media gives a very, very one-sided portrayal of the situation, very pro-Zionist, pro-Israel portrayal of the situation in Palestine and the oppression of Palestinians, and it's going to treat the storming of the Al-Aqsa Mosque in the same way. And so the American media is very selective, just as it gave very little coverage to the actual impact of American warfare in Iraq, instead focused on what the United States was doing, and is now giving, of course, much attention to the impact of the war on the Ukrainians. It's how the war and how these events are portrayed to the public, which leads to how the public feels about it. And this is very, very understandable given the enormous slant, the enormous bias in the American media.
So now that we can't be hopeful that countries like the United States might help alleviate the situation for Palestinians, how do you think NGOs can help raise awareness? How can the international community take measures? We do have measures such as the BDS movement. How effective have these movements been?
Well, having said that, nonetheless, awareness is growing all over the world, I think, and has been for some years about the reality of what Israel is doing. Some very important signs of that are the fact that Human Rights Watch and Amnesty International, the world's most prestigious human rights organizations, have both, for the first time, openly stated just in the recent last year, this past year, that Israel is guilty of apartheid. That's an important step. This awareness is growing around the world. It's much more understood and much more, the reality is much more grasped around the world than it was 10 years or 20 years or 30 years ago, even here in the United States. And that awareness will grow. But I urge people to keep in mind the long-term thing, just as in the Soviet Union. People ignored the reality of the Soviet Union for decades because it seemed powerful and the media didn't focus on it. But the day will come when this reality, oppression of Palestinians, of non-Jews, by Israel, that will not be ignored forever. And the day will come when it, too, will be dramatically obvious to the world, much as the struggle for Ukrainians, for their national existence, is now obvious to the world.
Now, it's a good thing that you mentioned Ukrainians, so we can draw a comparison between the two. We see that the Palestinians are now trying to defend their rights after all these years of oppression, and we've heard of sporadic attacks here and there by individuals, and of course resistance groups in Palestine have called it a legitimate response to the atrocities of Israelis. Can we expect another intifada?
Whether one calls it an intifada, it might erupt in, as we've seen in the last 2 weeks, sometimes on a more dramatic way and more violent way, sometimes in a more peaceful way. But as long as people are oppressed in the way that Palestinians are treated with injustice and oppression, the struggle will continue. It's not going to go away. And whether it's on 1 year more dramatic and violent or another year more peaceful and more subdued, the struggle will continue. And it's been going on for years. The world understands that. Just demographically, the reality is very much that this will not only continue, but even get worse because of the demographic trends that have been going on in Israel. And Israel's moral standing for much of the world, it's obvious. You know, much of the media in America has made a big point about the vote in the General Assembly of the United Nations condemning Russia for invading Ukraine. I understand that, of course, that's understandable. But the General Assembly, and even the Security Council, but the General Assembly has had even more lopsided, more obvious, more dramatic votes condemning Israel's policies. But those are ignored in the American media. Now, I understand, of course, that the media is not so biased in the rest of the world. And of course, in the Middle East and much of the world, this reality is better understood. It's a special problem, of course, here in the United States, where the media is so slanted, especially anything involving Israel, Zionist interests, and so forth. But the struggle will continue, and it's not going to go away.
Thank you very much, Mr. Mark Weber, Director of the Institute for Historical Review. Moving on, Iran's president says Tehran will not allow the Israeli regime to use the territory of any country, including Iraq, to threaten regional security. Ebrahim Raisi made the remarks in a meeting with the visiting Iraqi foreign minister, Fuad Hussein. The Iranian president expressed a regret over, quote, negligence on the part of the Iraqi Kurdistan region for its alleged ties with Israel. He said Tehran is carefully monitoring the regime's moves in the region. Raisi told the Iraqi minister that Tehran seriously expects Baghdad not to allow any part of Iraq to be used as a base against the security of the Islamic Republic. The Iranian president said the interests of the two countries are intertwined. For his part, Fuad Hussein said Iraq will never be a ground for those seeking to jeopardize Iran's stability. The Iraqi minister said Baghdad is ready to expand security cooperation with Tehran. And France's second round runoff is on April 24th, and the media is finally getting serious about comparing the two candidates' records and proposals. Analysts say that unrest in Ukraine may tip the scales in a toss-up race. Ramin Mazahari reports from Paris.
The latest second-round polls in France continue to show that Emmanuel Macron's once comfortable lead has vanished to make the race a dead heat. The mainstream media's insistence on talking about Islamophobia and xenophobia has already produced near-record abstention, but the unrest in Ukraine has forced real issues back to the fore. First the Great Recession, then the Age of Austerity, then the Yellow Vest Civil War, then the coronavirus era, and now an era of Russian sanctions? Devoted Europhile Macron remains committed to a long-term blockade of Russia, which requires years of economic suffering for the average household. Analysts say that voters may prefer Le Pen's France First insistence that any Russia sanctions not bankrupt French homes and businesses. Le Pen has also promised to pull out of NATO's command center to restore French independence. Macron is relying on a demonization campaign of the National Front, just like in 2017, when the number two reason people voted for Macron was to block them from coming to power. Back when he thought victory was assured, Macron promised to raise the retirement age to 65 this fall. That may cost him key older and left-wing votes. He's backtracking and saying that he's now willing to listen to the ideas and desires of voters. Do left-wing voters believe Macron's claims that he's now willing to govern by consensus? Does France view Le Pen differently after 5 years of Macronism? The winning candidate may be the one who proves that they have changed the most since the very different year of 2017. Ramin Mazahari, Paris.
The Russia-Ukraine war keeps driving food and energy prices higher worldwide. The International Monetary Fund says the fallout of the conflict has prompted it to cut global growth forecasts for this and next year.
In the past 7 weeks, the world has experienced a second major crisis, a war on top of a pandemic. We will be projecting a further downgrade in global growth for both 2022 and 2023. Fortunately, for most countries, growth will still remain in positive territory. That said, the impact of the war will contribute to forecast downgrades for 143 economies this year, accounting for 86% of global GDP.
The IMF chief said countries which are net importers of food and fuel in Africa, Asia, and Europe risk the biggest growth downgrades. She added that the high rates of inflation worldwide are likely to remain elevated for longer than previously estimated. Meanwhile, the European Central Bank raised the alarm about the severe impacts of the conflict on the Eurozone economy.
The war in Ukraine is severely affecting the euro area economy and has significantly increased uncertainty. The impact of the war on the economy will depend on how the conflict evolves, on the effect of current sanctions, and on possible further measures.
The Eurozone inflation rose 7.5% in March compared to the previous year due to a surge in fuel prices. This is a level not seen in four decades. Official figures also show the UK inflation rate reached 7% in March, the highest since 1992. The eighth week of the Ukraine war and day 51 of Russia's military operations there. Powerful explosions are heard in the capital, Kiev. Still no report on possible casualties. Ukrainian media have reported explosions in other cities too, including Kherson in the south, Kharkiv in the east, and the western town of Ivano-Frankivsk. Air raids and sirens were also reported in eastern regions of Luhansk and Zaporizhia. The Ukrainian government says Russia is preparing the new attacks aimed at taking Donbass in the east. The region includes the self-proclaimed republics of Luhansk and Donetsk. In the meantime, Russia has confirmed that its flagship sank in the Black Sea, but it rejected Ukraine's statement of sinking the warship with missiles. Moscow says the vessel went down in stormy conditions after it was engulfed by fire. And now with that, we come to the end of this edition of World News. Stay tuned.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
It guides us through life. It has taught us everything. We should learn and appreciate what it gives us.
واقعیت زندگی
and try to apply them to our daily lives.
چجوری ممکنه؟
How is it possible?
از راه قرآن
by means of Quran.
این خوندن قرآن و تلاوت قرآن قدم اول است برادران من این قدم آخر نیست
Reading and recitation of the Quran is the first step, brothers, not the last one.
هو الذی أرسل رسوله بالهدى ودين.
It is he who has sent his apostle with the guidance and the religion of truth, that he may make it prevail over all religions, though the polytheists should be averse.
والذي أرسل رسوله بالهدى ودين الحق ليظهره على الدين كله ولو كره المشركون.
تلاوت قرآن با صوت خوش، با آداب که شیوه خاصی دارد، موسیقی خاصی دارد، روش خاصی دارد، اینها چیزای لازم است.
Recitation of the Quran in nice tones should be performed according to particular methods and tones.
اما این کافی نیست.
But it's not enough.
مشکل بزرگ مسلمانان دنیا دوری از قرآن، دوری از قرآن، از قرآن.
Muslims' major problem is losing touch with the Quran. Quran, Quran. کتاب
path towards enlightenment.
In the name of God, the All-Compassionate, the All-Merciful. Salam and welcome to another episode of our weekly series titled Path Towards Enlightenment, which is an endeavor to make you and us familiar with an easy and fluent explanation of God's final scripture to all mankind, the Noble Quran, that was revealed to the last and greatest of all messengers, Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny. As you know, last week we completed explanation of Surah Qamar, and from this Friday onwards, we embark on explanation of the next Surah, that is Surah Ar-Rahman, which is number 55 in the serial order of compilation of the Noble Quran. It has 78 ayahs and is considered the crown of the Noble Quran, since it opens with the word Ar-Rahman, or the All-Beneficent, thus proclaiming one of the most beautiful attributes of the Almighty Creator. This surah highlights the All-Merciful Lord's wonders of creation, describes the end of the material world, and paints an evocative picture of the delights of paradise. Hell is briefly contrasted in Ayah 43 with the joys that await the righteous. The refrain, فَبِأَيِّ آلَاءِ رَبِّكُمَا تُكَذِّبَانِ, which means, so which of your Lord's bounties will you both, mankind and jinn, deny? Runs throughout the surah, which divides mankind and jinn into three classes. The disbelievers in Ayah 41, the best of believers in Ayah 46, and the ordinary believers in Ayah 62. A hadith from the Prophet about the benefits of Surah Ar-Rahman says, whoever recites it, Allah will have mercy on his weakness and regard it as expression of gratitude. According to the Prophet's 16th infallible heir, Imam Ja'far Sadiq, peace upon him, on the Day of Judgment, this surah will assume the form of a handsome human with wondrous fragrance and will be told by God Almighty to point out those of the believers who used to recite it. It will then be allowed to beseech God for the forgiveness of its reciters whom the All-Merciful will pardon. Let us start with recitation of ayahs 1, 2, 3 and 4 of Surah Ar-Rahman.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Ar-Rahman 'allama al-Qur'an, khalaqa al-insan, 'allamahu al-bayan.
In the name of Allah, the All Beneficent, the All Merciful. He taught the Quran. He created man and taught him articulate speech. The opening of the surah with God's wondrous attribute, Ar-Rahman, or the All-Beneficent, is indicative of divine blessings which are all-encompassing and benefit both believers and disbelievers in the transient life of the mortal world, even if they fail to realize these or express gratitude. The next ayah means to say that God taught and revealed the Noble Quran as the final heavenly scripture for the guidance of all mankind, to his last and greatest messenger, Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny. Ayah 3 and 4 refer to the creation of mankind as the most wondrous creature in the world of existence, and the gift of a speech coupled with intellect given to human beings in order to ensure steady progress through proper expression of words and development of the art of writing, without which we would never have been able to record events, transmit knowledge to future generations, and explore the various vistas of science. From these ayahs, we learn that, number one, the All-Merciful God, whose compassion is all-encompassing, showers his benefits on all creatures in the transient life of the mortal world, whether they believe in him and his commandments or not, so that there is no excuse or blame for the consequences of afterlife and the day of judgment, where reward and punishment will be meted out as per our deeds. Number two, the Noble Quran, with its unmatched eloquence and timeless wisdom, is the source of guidance and infinite blessings. Number three, mankind is the best of creation, and it is the Almighty Creator who is the real teacher of mankind by granting the gift of intellect and the power of speech. And number four, the ever-increasing vocabulary in the various languages spoken, along with the development of writing, ensure the progress of human societies and their mastering of science and technology, along with the firmness of faith, as part of the mercy of the All-Beneficent Lord. Now we invite you to listen to ayahs 5 and 6 of the same surah.
الشمس والقمر بحسبان والنجم والشجر يسجدان.
The sun and the moon are disposed calculatedly, and the herb and the trees prostrate to Allah. These ayahs refer to some more of the divine blessings, such as the sun and the moon, which follow their fixed courses with measured out calculation. The existence of the sun is one of the greatest divine blessings bestowed upon man, since life would be unimaginable in the solar system without its light and heat. The moon, for its part, plays a key role in human life. It is the light of the dark nights, while its gravity is the source of ebb and flow in oceans that results in life in the seas and the flowing of rivers. Besides the fixed course of the orbit of the moon around the earth and the orbit of the Earth around the Sun, while rotating on its axis, result in the orderly functioning of nights and days, years, months, and seasons. Consequently, the growth of different forms of vegetation, including trees, all of which provide provision to mankind and ensure coolness through the blowing of pleasant winds, are part of divine blessings. Without such order, human life and its progress could never be possible. An important point to note is the appropriate distance of the celestial bodies from each other, which means the orbit of the Earth and its distance from the Sun are all well calculated, without which great disruptions would occur in the solar system and consequently in human life. These ayahs teach us that, number one, the solar system, at the center of which is the Sun and includes human life on planet Earth, exists as per precise calculations and functions in the most orderly manner. Number two, the entire universe has been created in a way to provide the best services to the best of creation. The human beings, most of whom, unfortunately, are ungrateful to God and destroyers of the world of nature, without realizing these wondrous divine blessings. And number three, the entire creation, including the celestial bodies as well as herbs and trees, have been created for a purpose and are obedient to the one and only Creator.
Joining us now from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
The dead bodies that were scattered in Bucha and Ukraine are a sight of great concern and sadness. Russia says the images are staged, but Ukraine and its Western allies accuse Russia of being behind such atrocities in Ukraine, with the U.S. president once again calling the Russian president a war criminal that should be tried. But what about U.S. and its allies' atrocities committed in other parts of the world like Afghanistan, Syria, Yemen, or Iraq? Can those be dismissed just as collateral damage? Well, in this edition of the Spotlight, we will look at the double standards there and ulterior motives that the U.S. may have when it comes to the Ukrainian conflict. Let me first introduce our guest for this edition of the Spotlight. We have Ian Williams, international affairs analyst, who joins us from New York. Also joining us, Tony Gosling, historian and investigative journalist, who joins us from Bristol.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
Welcome to you both. Let me first start with you, Ian Williams, and ask you about what we have seen on Bucha and the way that it's been covered and what has occurred there. Ukraine accuses the Russian military of massacring hundreds of civilians there. Russia denies the killing of civilians and argues that the images of dead bodies have been staged. What do you think?
Yes, the Russian military almost certainly massacred hundreds of civilians there. It's their calling card. We have satellite imagery showing the bodies in the street. We have eyewitnesses seeing the bodies. We have the bodies themselves with bullets in them. We have them in the side of Russian bases. So this is a slam dunk, and no amount of protestation from Sergei Lavrov, who I knew at the United Nations and used to have more credibility than this, because he used to confess to disquiet at what the Serbs were doing, but then stood up and defended them. And now, yes, there are double standards. Yes, when Joe Biden calls for international war crimes trials of Putin and the Russians, he is quite right, as long as he says this applies to others as well, as long as it applies to the Israelis over what they did in Gaza and Lebanon. But he protects them all of the time. And this is where the United States has consistently disarmed itself and also disarmed the United Nations human rights mechanisms. Because by showing it was willing to use its veto on behalf of a proxy state, Israel, it's giving sort of carte blanche to the Russians to do the same. It's very difficult to put your hand on your heart and say they must be prosecuted, it's a war crime. But those aren't war crimes because they're our allies doing it, and we've been covering for them all along. And this is the fundamental hypocrisy of the situation at the moment. It's interesting watching, what we see here is very much like what we saw in Grozny. Look at those pictures of Grozny, where the Russians went to liberate the Chechens again. And now those liberated Chechens are coming and visiting the same damage on the people around Kiev and in Ukraine. There's atrocity after atrocity. And
right.
Trying to pretend that our side's atrocities don't matter, but theirs do, is really, it's as bad as, it's worse than a crime. It's stupid.
Well,
because it means you're laying yourself open, which is what Biden's doing.
Let's break this open a little bit more. Obviously, first we need to get an idea of both sides. Tony Gosling, the Russian president, had just came out a few hours back accusing Ukrainian authorities of actually being behind this, what he has called crude and cynical provocations. If you can describe what he may mean by that. And he said this was an assessment as it was described, again, of Kiev regime's crude and cynical provocation in the city of Bucha. What does he mean by that?
Well, look, you're very privileged because here in the West, we are not getting any balanced coverage. It's great to have someone to discuss and debate this with, putting both sides, as should have been being put on Monday at the UN Security Council, except the British chair of the Security Council stopped that discussion even happening. So that, of course, is what the Western media need for a propaganda blitz on one side. I think, very few of us were actually in these places at the time. And only those who were and who have access to the evidence can really make a decision and a judgment one way or the other. But I think the likelihood is, considering we had a two-day gap between when the Russians pulled out of Bucha and when these allegations were made, including with the mayor actually making no mention of this as well in the interim, so that apparently this hadn't happened in the meantime. These are bits of evidence which all need to be put together if there is to be any kind of... But I would suggest what was going on here is yet another Western provocation and accusations being thrown, which at the moment it doesn't seem to me as if there is the really strong evidence one side or the other committed. We know that we have Azov battalion Nazis roaming around on the Ukrainian side, and it is absolutely possible that they are using things like sabotage, false flag manipulation to manipulate the Western press in the propaganda war, because although the Russians seem as if they're much stronger on the ground, in the information war, I'm afraid the Russians, as Sergei Lavrov himself admitted, are really small players, and they're very, very much behind the curve. And so the NATO countries, the Western press, think that they can win through propaganda. And of course, the problem with that is if you don't get these sorts of events, the so-called Russian atrocities, which may be and maybe Ukrainian atrocities, if you don't get the Western press interrogating these, What then happens is you can create the situation where NATO, who I believe are very much involved in Ukraine, although they like to hold their hands up and say, no, nothing to do with us. And I've got a lot of evidence for NATO carrying out atrocities through Gladio, basically picking up from the Nazi werewolves in World War II, that they may well be involved. The problem is, if this is allowed to not be interrogated in the Western press, the way it's been, this kind of what you might call propaganda blitz, blaming the Russians, when we don't really know, there's been no proper investigation yet, right. These headlines will stick in people's minds. And the thing is that these kinds of things may be used in the future to give, through the media, the West's NATO countries an excuse to get involved. Say, well, look at this atrocity. Now it's time. We must act. We must actually send NATO troops in. And, of course, we all know where that could lead.
Exactly. Well, let's talk about what you mentioned there, what Tony Gosling mentioned there, Ian Williams, about the UK. We're looking at how there should be an investigation that Russia has called for a UN Security Council meeting on this. But the UK blocked it. Why do you think the UK did that?
I think the UK blocked it in disgust, absolute disgust. And for once, I agreed with this British government at the bravado and the chutzpah of the Russians committing a massacre and then saying, oh, look what they made me do. Let's get it straight. There was one day between the Russians leaving, fleeing, by the way, because they were defeated by the locals who hate them. They fled. Then reporters came in. I know some of those reporters personally. They would not lie. What did they see? They saw bodies that had visibly been lying there for days. Their fingers are black and rotten. They are buried in the earth. There are satellite pictures showing those bodies for 3 weeks before, during the Russian occupation. Independent private satellites were taking pictures. The Americans could probably provide better ones because they have better definition, but it was a private company. Other reporters came in and saw it. They went round them. Locals went in. We have eyewitness testimony from locals saying the Russians came and shot my wife, my husband, shot my children, or were doing this, that, and the other. You've got the actual Russian bases with the Russian MREs scattered around and the vodka bottles, lots of vodka bottles, which they looted from the houses, and the corpses next to them buried in their bases. I mean, this is so slam dunk. I'm very glad that Tony Gosling has at last had the temerity to admit there's a possibility that the Russians might have done it. This is a slam dunk, and it is a war crime. And yes, there are other war crimes. No amount of whataboutery about Yassin, Sabra and Shatila, what's happening in Yemen. I agree with all of those. But I have been party at the United Nations for almost 20 years at the attempt to operationalize the International Criminal Court of Justice. I supported it against Milosevic. I supported it against the Sudanese in Darfur, and I support it now against the Russians. I would also support it against the Americans if they did Mile. It was a friend of mine who broke the story of Mile, the American atrocity. But none of us ever said, what about? What about? And that is really the big cry that the Russians keep producing. They did this in Grozny before. They have committed unspeakable atrocities against their own people in the civil war.
Okay.
And well, this is their calling card. Look at the pictures of Grozny. Look at the pictures of Kiev, and you see, it almost says, "Thank you, Moscow," on the bottom of that postcard.
Well, we need to talk about the past here, Tony Gosling. You can take your pick here. I have some that I noted here: Haiti, where there were indiscriminate killings of Haitians under direct command of a U.S. officer going back decades ago. Obviously, we're looking at what happened after World War II. And the Pacific War, as it was called, and it was quite interesting, some of the stuff that came out of this. The Korean War, the No Gun Rye Massacre, all of these involve U.S., and all of these involved what many say are war crimes, with hundreds and hundreds were killed. Of course, the more recent ones, Afghanistan, Syria, Yemen, and Iraq. Which ones would you like to put into perspective for us?
Well, I'd like to look much more closely at what's been going on in Europe since the Second World War, particularly the CIA, once it was created, their support for Ukrainian Nazis as part of the US Cold War effort, the idea of false flags very much in the NATO intelligence pocket right the way through the 1980s in order to stop the Italians bringing in a communist government. Operation Gladio in Italy saw the far right in Italy actually blowing up individuals in squares and various places around Italy and blaming it on the communists. So the idea was that the far right could actually kill Italian people within Italy and then try and blame it on the Russians. Well, many people in Italy did believe it. Many people didn't. They even actually assassinated Aldo Moro as well, prime minister. So there's been a big, big load of activity from the NATO intelligence services right throughout Europe. The same sort of thing going on in Belgium, by the way, when the Belgian government tried to reject US cruise missiles. And the actual pedigree of these far-right Operation Gladio forces, as many people don't know this, but at the end of the Second World War, the SS created, the Nazis created stay-behind forces that they called werewolves. Their job was to create sabotage behind enemy lines as the Allies advanced towards Berlin. And the same tactics have been used, to stay-behind forces, weapons caches, this sort of thing. They couldn't resist using them, and so they used them for political purposes. I think what we're looking at now is almost like the most recent phase, the most recent stage of this, quite possibly, using the same sort of tricks. And the big culprits for me are the Western press. We had, for example, no interrogation today as the former Archbishop of Canterbury, Rowan Williams, called for the Russians to be, the Orthodox Church in Russia, to be expelled from the World Council of Churches. What they didn't tell us, that actually Rowan Williams, even though he was Archbishop of Canterbury, was initiated into the Order of Druids, which is completely the opposite of the Christian Church. And so what you had, the farce of a Druid telling the world that the Russian Orthodox Church should be ejected from the World Council of Churches with no interrogation, no background whatsoever in the Western press. So I think there's a very powerful, a very big campaign right across the Western press to demonize Russia. Paul Burrell, the former French intelligence officer, he actually called it, he said the secret code name in NATO is Operation Beluga, the idea being to discredit Russia, to discredit Putin. And of course, the idea is here that they can then get away with all sorts of stricter measures and even a potential move to a third world war against Russia if Russia can be discredited in this way. I think that's what we've been seeing over the last few days with these provocations, but I may be proved wrong. I don't like to try and come to conclusions before we've had evidence from both sides and a proper investigation.
Indeed, something that doesn't seem to actually come into fruition at this point. So Ian Williams, our guest there from Bristol, Tony Gosselin, talks about the fact that both the U.S. and NATO in turn are maybe after something bigger in terms of the way that they are going after Russia. I mean, Russia at this point is the most sanctioned country in the world. I'm not too sure how much more damage they can do to Russia. Of course, economically, there's still some more damage they can do. What I'd like to ask you, Ian Williams, is in the area of negotiations. There was a particular interesting article coming out from the Washington Post that said that NATO says Ukraine to decide on peace deal with Russia, but with limits. Now, that raises question marks here. Why would there be limits on how Ukraine negotiates with Russia?
Look, I don't think the Washington Post is speaking for the government in Washington, let alone the government in Kiev. And what we've just heard is a long list of completely circumstantial, occasionally accurate diatribes about NATO. No fan of NATO, no fan of the United States, completely think that Mylae massacre should be prosecuted and dug up again. Yes, Deir Yassin and Sabra and Shatila should be prosecuted. Yes, Gaza should be prosecuted. This should be prosecuted. We have Russian troops on a sovereign United Nations member's territory. They went in unprovoked with no, there are no Ukrainian troops on Russian territory. They massacred. We have evidence, unashamed evidence from the Russians that they have used weapons of mass destruction against civilians in the cities. They've blown apart Kiev. They've blown apart the rest. So anything about Second World War preparations, werewolves, gladio, it's about as relevant as introducing the Roman gladiators into the proceedings. Yes, people were killed then. People are being killed now by Moscow. They're being killed in defiance of international law.
Well, that's
it is a crime of aggression for the Russians to go into Ukraine. It is a war crime and a violation of the Geneva Conventions
right.
to shoot prisoners, to shoot civilians. They have such a charge sheet against them, and no amount of bleating and counter-accusations. They have not shown any evidence
but
that the Ukrainians
when but when
have
there
gone
are possibilities
of
talks,
of
well, when there are possibilities of talks, you don't think that this is true? That perhaps there that NATO and I should say the U.S. Leading the way have motives that this resolution cannot come about unless we really deal a heavy blow to Russia.
No, they've said quite strongly that it's up to the Ukrainians. It's the Ukrainians who are saying we cannot agree to terms while these evil cutthroats have a knife at our throats, are raping our women and blowing up our children.
But they've said
that's a reasonable position.
They have said issues of global security are at stake here, and you can't just give concessions. They've blatantly said that. So Zelensky's
whose concessions? Somebody comes into your house, he grabs hold of your daughter, holds a knife to her throat, and then asks you why you're not conceding and being reasonable. Where is the justice in this? I think there's something missing in the state of balance. Whataboutery has gone mad here. It really has. You do not invade somebody else's country
sure.
and then blame them for imposing conditions
okay.
on talking to you. You get out of there and you say, we were wrong and we will prosecute those responsible, Putin and the generals who committed these atrocities.
Well, Tony Gosling, what do you think? I mean, again, the reports out there, and this is not the first time, but for it to come out blatantly and say this, that, Zelensky can't come out and give concessions because, as the Western backers, they have called it, have said that any settlement to this war can't be done because there are larger issues of global security at risk. And I'm guessing that maybe is perhaps pointing to China. What do you think, Tony Gosling?
Well, yeah, I mean, obviously, China is sitting and watching this from the background. They very much got the Russians back because the United States has been provoking over there too. Of course, the US has been provoking Russia in Ukraine. It's quite obvious. We had the Munich Security Conference just before the Russians invaded with Zelensky threatening to arm his army with nuclear weapons. The Russians can't just ignore that. We've also seen, by the way, today, the latest sanctions on Russia are that to stop the use of Russian coal. Now, we in Europe, we're wondering, well, okay, so we can't use Russian coal. I'm sure, Prince Charles and the rest of them, the climate people, will be very pleased about that. But this benefits the US. If there's no Russian energy coming into Europe, the United States can jack up the prices of the energy it is selling to Europe. So I think we should look at this maybe as a, in part anyway, as a kind of overreaction to what Russia's done in order to benefit US energy companies. In fact, I've seen over the years energy being used more and more in these sorts of discussions. When it comes to talks, I would like to see, very much like to see, the basic demands of Putin met. That is to say, very simple, Lugansk, Donetsk and Crimea to give up the claim on those because there was a war going on there anyway in these breakaway republics. Much better to say, well, let's give up your bombing of these places and let's just have peace there. And the other thing was just to guarantee that they wouldn't join NATO. Why on earth can Zelensky not do that? And I'll tell you why. It's because he is reading a script written in Washington. This is actually what it looks like to me.
Zelensky
is
has said
US,
he's prepared to
US
give up
wants to sacrifice
NATO.
Europe. Let me finish my sentence and then you can have your say. The US wants to sacrifice Europe to weaken Russia because Russia is the only power in the world that really 100% has the moral high ground and stands up to the United States. Oh. Now, at least at last, that there's been some kind of retribution for all of the NATO activities, and they say they're not there, but they are,
okay.
in Ukraine, doing things like encouraging these Azov battalion Nazis. This is obviously a provocation to Russia, and you know they cannot allow the
sure.
situation to develop as developed
invading
before
another country isn't a provocation.
When the Russians were invaded and they had a crisis as to whether Russia was going to exist or not. Russians can't allow that situation
okay.
to develop again.
Let's bring in Ian Williams. Ian Williams, go ahead.
I mean, there's some complete absence. This is Alice in Wonderland stuff. Did Ukraine turn round to Russia and say, you must leave the Shanghai Cooperation Pact? No. It was Russia's decision to do what it wanted. Did it even say, by the way, you should get your troops out of Moldova, out of Georgia, and the other places you've occupied? No, it didn't. It stayed in its own territories. It didn't invade, and it has now been invaded, And we're talking about parity and how the Ukrainians must make concessions. This is right back to 1941. Why didn't Stalin just give up the Ukraine to Hitler then? And he could have had peace, perhaps. Or Winston Churchill, he was offered by not my favorite person, but the Germans basically said to him through back channels, you kiss and make up with us and we'll let you have the British Empire still. He said, no. It's one of the few things I admire about him. He said, no, you do not knuckle under to dictators okay. and invaders. And
very
that's
well.
The position let's with Ukraine let's... and the Nazi invaders from Russia, who are Nazis in every way. They kill children. They kill people. They kill prisoners. They bomb cities. They are evil. The
All right.
ruling class
let's
in
give
Russia
30 seconds.
Need to be dealt with.
Sorry, let's give 30 seconds in closing to Tony Gosselin. Go ahead.
Well, I mean, these are sort of ridiculous provocations, calling the Russians Nazis. We have real Nazis right now in Ukraine. The Azov Battalion really do support Adolf Hitler. And they use the same sort of provocative tactics as well. That is to say, they like to create false flags, like the false flag that started the Second World War, the Gleiwitz incident, where the Nazis actually grabbed POWs and poisoned them and made it look as if to the world's press it was the Poles who were behind it.
Sorry.
And it's the Nazis now.
All right. Sorry. We're first out of time. I apologize for that, Tony Gosselin. Tony Gosselin, their historian and investigative journalist. Ian Williams, thank you for your input. International affairs analyst from New York. And with that, we come to an end for this edition of The Spotlight. From Mikhail Tapoyevsky, goodbye. Until next time.
Is there any other way to get familiar with Islam besides mainstream media? Try IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.